Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's EHS podcast for the week ending February 13th. My name is Alan Nguyen, and I'll be bringing you the latest news in environmental health and safety. So our first story comes from the NTSB and their recent safety recommendations to all railway operators. The National Transportation Safety Board, also known as the NTSB, recently issued an urgent safety recommendation to all railway operators to check electronic alertness devices on their trains to ensure they work as intended. The recommendation was sent to the Railroad Administration, the Association of American Railroads, the American Short Line and Regional Railroad Association, and the American Public Transportation Association. The recommendation comes on the wake of the NTSB's ongoing investigation in the head-on collision last August between two Union freight trains in Hoxie, Arkansas, that left two crew members dead and two others injured. The device alerter is designed to monitor the activity of locomotive crew members to ensure they are awake and alert. The way the device works is if the locomotive engineer is idle for too long, a sound and visual signal is triggered. If the crew fails to respond, the alerter would automatically apply the train brakes. Now, in the case of the Hoxie incident, an investigation conducted by the NTSB found that the alerter in the train was fooled by automated activity. Now, according to investigators, the train was equipped with a horn sequencer. The horn sequencer is activated with a single push of the sequencer foot pedal under the engineer's control console. Once activated, it continually sounds the cadence for approaching a highway rail grade crossing. A series of two long sounds, one short sound, and another long sound until the sequencer foot pedal is again depressed. The train's event recorder noted that the horn sequencer reset the alert each time the horn blew, as if the locomotive engineer were commanding each sound manually. As a result, the device would not sound an alarm to the train crew or activate the brakes. And while the NTSB has not yet reported the accident's probable causes, the agency has issued these urgent recommendations to address the safety issue that came to light during the investigation. And sticking with the theme of transportation, our next story comes out of Chicago, where the federal government today announced the Chicago Transit Authority will be getting $120 million in funding to help finance the overhaul of the Blue Train line leading to the O'Hare International Airport. The mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, and the U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox announced the funding on Thursday. It's part of an extensive four-year project to improve the stretch of the Blue Line that includes improving stations, track upgrades, and modernizing signal systems to make travel faster and more reliable. Officials say it's the biggest overall investment on the line since it was extended to O'Hare in 1984. The money comes through the Transportation's Infrastructure Finance and Innovative Act and will in the remaining financial hole in the financing for the $492 million project. The improvements were first announced in 2013, and three stations have already been upgraded, among other changes. Funds are going to rebuild most of the Blue Line stations northwest of the loop for extensive track and signal work and to build a couple of midline turnaround tracks so that trains can reverse direction in the middle of rush hour without having to go all the way to the end of the line. Chicago has the second busiest mass transit system in the U.S. and is also the oldest in the country, and more than 80,000 riders use the O'Hare branch each weekday. Under the terms of the loan, the CTA will draw down the money as needed, cutting interest expenses. The remaining money for the $500 million job is coming from the state and local funds. Now, shifting gears, our next story deals with the stigma of mental health in the workplace. So a survey conducted by the Mental Health Commission of Canada recently found that 33% of Canadian employees are now suffering or have suffered from some form of mental health condition, such as depression or an anxiety disorder. The study also found that another 27% are experiencing significant forms of stress. Now, as an employer, you may be wondering, why should I be concerned about these findings? Well, that's because 58% of employees surveyed said their productivity has been negatively impacted by stress at work, while 45% said they thought about leaving their job due to workplace stress and its impact on them. In addition, almost one-third of workers have taken time off due to workplace stress, and 25% have become ill in the last 6 months due to such stress. And employers are obligated to accommodate workers with disabilities, including mental disorders. These results are consistent with other studies that have shown various psychological and mental health issues workers are suffering from, such as depression and their impact on the workplace. 71% of workers that were surveyed expressed concern about workplace stigma. Stigma occurs as a result of stereotypes and negative perceptions, and is often associated with mental health conditions. So what can employers do to remove the stigma in the workplace? Well, the Mental Health Commission of Canada recommends a number of solutions. For starters, employers can educate their workers about mental illness to reduce any fear, stigma, or discrimination in the workplace. They can also foster a healthier workplace environment. This means establishing culture that's conducive to supporting employees' health by raising awareness to workplace programs and policies that promote mental and physical health and wellness. And finally, promoting accessibility by providing access to employee assistance programs or other appropriate referral resources to assist employees. And if you'd like more information on mental health and psychological safety in the workplace, we've provided a link in the resource section of this podcast. And our final story may be of interest to those working in open concept office spaces. Now, the recent trend in designing office spaces has been open concept. That is, most workers have cubicles and few working in enclosed office spaces. And the theory behind it is that open concept offices encourage collaboration. But according to the survey by Canada Life Group Insurance Research, open plan offices may promote the sharing of more than just ideas. Workers were asked to rank how easy it is to be healthy in their working environment. Workers in open plan offices gave an average score of 6.1, while those who work mostly from home gave an average score of 8.1. Now, this discrepancy is bolstered by the finding that employees who work from home took an average of 1.8 sick days last year, while workers in open plan offices took 3.1 days. One possible reason for the difference is that by encouraging and actually forcing workers to interact more with their colleagues, open concept offices also make it easier for infected workers to spread illnesses. So if your office has an open plan design, or your workplace is one of which workers work in open common spaces such as factory floor or warehouse, you might want to consider having your workers stay home if they're sick. It's also a good idea, especially during flu season, to recommend that all workers frequently and properly wash their hands and exercise proper coughing etiquette. And that concludes this week's EHS podcast. If you'd like to learn more about this story or any of the other stories that we covered this week, be sure to check out the resource links. Also, if you haven't done so already, be sure to check out the other podcasts that we have available. And as always, thanks for listening.